four copies. I would like to come in and read the Word of God. Now look, if you are on your way to heaven, and I am on the way to hell, what do you think to do?
There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Matt Schneid is brilliant, and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. It's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
History. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. And we turn rapidly to a lost Gene Shepherd episode from this very day in history, 1962, July 9th, a Monday. All about cargo cults. You know what those are? If you don't, Gene Shepherd will tell you right now. And also do another rendition of The Hellbound Train. Good stuff. Lost Gene Shepherd, available nowhere else but right here in the dustbin of history, WBAI New York.
Listen, speaking of choking up, you know, this is another thing I suspect makes baseball an intriguing thing to watch, because it delineates very closely, very clearly, and very completely between good, evil, success, and failure. And when a guy flubs the dub, That, you know, he has flubbed the dub. I mean, but flubbed the dub. Speaking of choke-ups, there was a very famous story. Can you imagine this situation? A terrible situation happened. It was a couple of years ago. There were two teams that were battling for the pennant. I mean, they were neck and neck, and they were right down to the last, maybe the last 4 or 5 days. They had about maybe a week to go before the World Series was to commence, and there was about a half a game separating these two teams. Well, this is what happened. There were runners on first and second base. Oh, what it embarrasses me to even think about it. There were runners on first and second base. You got the scene now. The shadows are lengthening. It is September. And the great, heavy, rich, dark, autumnal shadows are laying down across first base. And the visions of the Yankees are dancing in every player's dreams every night as he goes to bed. Can you imagine what it's like to be dreaming that next week? Oh, it's a nightmare. Do you know the nightmares that an actor goes through 3 or 4 days before the opening of a show after he's been working on a part for about 6 weeks? Literally nightmares where you slip into the role in your nightmare. And you slip out of it. Then you see yourself running down long alleys. Running like mad. You're half an hour late. The show has started and you're not there. Or somebody's giving you your cue and you can't remember your lines. You get involved. Well, ball players get involved in baseball, you know, just like that. And they dream. It's like a nightmare in the last couple of months, particularly when a team is involved in a pennant drive. It's like Nuttiesville. It's the only thing you can think of, night and day, you see. Well, here was what was happening. The shadows were lengthening. It is in the late innings. These two teams are half a game apart, and they're battling down to the wire, neck and neck for the pennant. And boy, let me tell you, there is really nothing, I'd say, short of becoming elected president or winning an Oscar or making it with Elizabeth Taylor, that is more a dream of American glory than to win the pennant. Really, to win the pennant. And so here's what happened. There are two men on base. It's in the late innings. As a matter of fact, in the last inning. And the score is standing 2-1 in favor of the team that is out in the field. The team at bat gets a little rally going. A man now gets around to second. There's a little scratch bingle by this rookie. He gets to first base, just barely makes it by a fantastic burst of speed. He is now safe at first base. There are two outs. One out. That's it. That's the crux of it. One out with two men on. And the whole state is tense with anxiety. Thousands of people are listening, watching, waiting. Millions of people the world over. It's being fed to the armed forces. Okay, this is what happened. The guy on second somehow is out. They pick him off. There's a moment of silence, and the rookie on first base begins to wander off first base and into the dugout with two outs. He's in the dugout. The pitcher turns around with complete disbelief, and he sees this rookie down in there. He's heighten up. Suddenly he turns, he looks. Oh, two outs. I'm in the dugout. And the pitcher calmly stands on first base with the rock in his hand, waiting for the guy to come back to tag him out. The whole stadium just sits there with its tongue. Everybody's mouth. They're aghast at the boo-boo. And he just stands in the dugout, looking out, hanging on to the edge of the roof. He never did come back to first base, just stood there. They called him out for sheer embarrassment. They called him out, yeah, for holding up the game or flubbing the dub or goofing up or something. They just called him out. And he stood over there. And the shadows got longer and longer and longer, and the crowds roared higher and higher and higher. And there was this great thunder off stage, and once again the kingdom has crumbled under the crushing thunder of Oedipus and Electra. Talk about Greek tragedy. Speaking of Greek tragedy, there's no way to go. When you were a tadpole, and I was a fish, in the Paleozoic time, and side by side in the ebbing tide, we sprawled through the ooze and slime, were skittered with many a caudal flip through the depths of the Cambrian fen. My heart was rife with the joy of life, for I loved you even then. Mindless we lived, and mindless we died. and mindless we loved. And deep in a rift of the Caradoc drift, we slumbered, side by side. The world turned on in the lathe of time. The hot lands heaved amain till we caught our breath from the womb of death and crept into limelight again. We were amphibians, scaled and tailed and drab as a dead man's fist. We coiled east neath the dripping trees or trailed through the mud and sand, croaking and blind, with our three clawed feet writing a language dumb, with never a spark in the empty dark to hint a life to come. Yet happy we lived, and happy we loved, and happy we died once more. Our forms were rolled in the clinging mold of a Neocomian shore. The eons came, and the eons fled, and the sleep that wrapped us fast was riven away in a newer day, and the night of death was past. Then, light and swift through the jungle trees, we swung in our airy flights, or breathed in the balms of the fronded palms, in the hush of the moonlight night. And oh, what beautiful years were these, when our hearts clung to each, when life was filled and our senses thrilled in the first faint dawn of speech. Thus, life by life and love by love, we pass through the cycles strange. And breath by breath and death by death, we followed the chain of change. Till there came a time in the law of life when over the nursing sod the shadows broke and the soul awoke. Sometimes, hold it there now. Hold it there. You know, Monday's a funny day. A strange day. Monday is a day that has always been a little, just a vague trauma ever since the dawn of religion, you know. In fact, even before that. And perhaps this has deep, perhaps there's no question about it, deep psychological, theological, philological, etymological, ecological, and even anthropological roots that go so deep down it makes the banyan tree seem like a geranium. I mean, it's the way it is, you know, to be bugged on Monday. Whatever day, you know, in any religion happens to be Monday, it's always right to be bugged because, you see, it's a vague suspicion, always, that this one big day of the week, and every religion has it, you know, one way or another, that something's going to happen. There's going to be bugles blow or something, you know, or a fiery chariot will go rocking across the sky shooting out thunderbolts. And, you know, something is going to happen. And what happens? You wind up back with Mr. Grubbage on Monday morning in the fire department. And Grubbage, of course, is bugged too. And it's a fascinating, here we are, you see, it's Monday night, and the ooze of time, the eons passing, the slime of day and night. Oh, it's a problem, and has been one for a long time. And this problem, you see, is something which is rarely ever discussed, and is always referred to, you know, as the morning after, or the Monday morning blues. Oh, it goes much deeper than that. For example, of course, it plays such a part that the hope, the dream, the desire that something is going to come, is going to happen, is going to rescue us. This is very important. to take us out or somehow to ease our buggingness. Now, this is an old story. It's not new, and in every literature and in every time, people have believed that things could be better. Now, I'm not talking about gradually changing the way of life or changing the kind of water system we have or changing the roads, because having better water does not necessarily involve being happier, not in the deepest sense of it. Never has, never will. and the belief that we'll get rid of war someday. This has always been part of people's lives. People always believe this. And the other day, somebody sent me this wild, strange clipping, which, no, it isn't strange, it isn't, if you understand human nature at all. It's just the way it is. Out of the Evening Bulletin of Philadelphia, one of my favorite humor papers. And this was June 12th, 1962, Tuesday. I suspect that we ought to have, hold it there. We'll read this cold, and then we'll bring in the thunder and the lightning and the chariots roaring across the fan at the proper time. London, June 12th, and this is a since this is a London episode and it comes from the BBC, we should give it its proper professional. A scientist suggested today that if either Indonesian or Dutch paratroops landed in certain areas of central New Guinea, they might be hailed as gods, with a ready-made army of natives waiting to do their bidding. These are the areas of the strange cargo cults, which have spread through Melanesia, mostly within this century, in some cases as a result of natives meeting American aviators during the last war. Indonesia has laid territorial claim to Dutch New Guinea. There have been small landings by Indonesian commandos, but none as yet in the central mountains. Instruction we are about to discuss tonight. But any paratroopers had better have a trained anthropologist with them, said David Attenborough, whose specialty is natural history. The natives are primitive, but warlike, and they might try to kill anyone who did not know the kind of god they are waiting for. On the other hand, if they were accepted as gods, they could easily inflame the local population to do their bidding, whatever that might be. Attenborough himself studied one of the so-called cargo cults, a tribe which worships a white-faced god they call John Frum. I repeat, the name of their god is white-faced and bears the name John Frum, and who was apparently an American aviator in the Pacific fighting early in World War II. His followers are convinced Frum will return in his four-engine aeroplane with a cargo of all the white man's wealth they covet, and eternal happiness will ensue. Awaiting that day, they have erected a shrine, which Attenborough saw. It included a white-faced effigy of Frum, highly stylized, and a model of a propeller-driven airplane, also highly stylized. Nearby was a dummy airstrip and a warehouse of boughs and leaves ready to receive the cargo and to make welcome Mr. Frum. Out of bamboo, Frum's followers made imitations, highly stylized, of course, of American carbines, and crudely worked the letters U.S., into rough imitation of American T-shirts. When Attenborough was there, they had formed themselves, actually, into a sort of evangelistic army. These cults vary from district to district in Melanesia, Attenborough said. Apparently they came about through the impact of civilization on natives still technically in the Stone Age. They were bewildered by the airplanes they saw, and could not understand such things as Ken goods, chromium-plated lamps, and radio sets. Obviously, the natives thought, since these things cannot be chipped or woven, they must come from the gods, and the white man must have some special knowledge of how to obtain them. Hence the pathetic imitation of white men and the worship of such gods as John Flum. Speaking of strange native gods, this is WOR AM and FM New York. Your friendly station. Your station that loves you. Your station that puts out its arms nightly and embraces you. That makes no moral dicta, that lays down no rules nor regulations, but accepts one and all in eternal love. W-O-R. by some odd, strange juxtaposition, I want to show you. So I'm holding this up as, you know, we have fascinating little Freudian slips all over. And I'm holding this up now. I'm putting this in my special file, which I hope will be dug up 2,000 years from now. Next to this article, which was treated in all seriousness and with a vague sense of, gee, those poor slobs are sure off base, you know. Underneath it, there is a little tiny, one of those little fillers, and it says oil and linoleum. Linoleum gets its name from the large amount of linseed oil used in it. And then right next to that is one that says 15-hour devotions. The Reverend W. Hamilton Ollenbach, rector of the Episcopal Church, will conduct 15 hours of continuous devotions at his church next Monday. All together in man's striving, struggling division. Hold it there. I know somebody's going to write in and say Mr. Shepherd was anti-religious. Be careful now. You better be sure you know what religion is about before you say that. You know, you can't have it. You know, speaking of religion, please, would you please, No. That's it. Boom. That's the one. The one we just had. Now I'll give you the clue. Just hold on there, man. Hold on a minute now. Now listen to this. A Texas cowboy on a barroom floor had drunk so much he could hold no more. So he fell asleep with a troubled brain to dream that he rode on the hell-bound train. An engine with murderous blood was damp and was brilliantly lit with a brimstone lamp. An imp for fuel was shoveling bones while the furnace rang with 1,000 groans. The boiler was filled with lager beer and the devil himself was the engineer. The passengers were a most motley crew, church member, atheist, Gentile, and Jew, rich men in broadcloth, beggars in rags, handsome young ladies, and withered old hags, yellow and black men, red, brown, and white, all chained together. Oh, God, what a sight! While the train rushed on at an awful pace, the sulfurous fumes scorched their hands and face. Wider and wider the country grew, and faster the engine flew. Louder and louder the thunder crashed, and brighter the lightning flashed. Hotter and hotter the air became. Till the clothes were burnt from each quivering frame, and out of the distance there arose a yell. Ha! Said the devil. We're nearing hell. Then, oh, how the passengers all shrieked with pain and begged the devil to stop the train. But he capered about and danced with glee and laughed and joked at their misery. My faithful friends, you have done your work, and the devil never can payday shirk. You've bullied the weak. You've robbed the poor. The starving brother you've turned from your door. You've laid up gold where the canker rust and given free vent to your beastly lust. You've justice scorned and corruption sown, and trampled the laws of nature down. You've drunk, rioted, cheated, plundered, and lied, and mocked at God and your hell-born pride. Ha! You've paid full fare, so I'll carry you through. It's only right that you should have your due. Why, the laborer always expects his hire, so I'll land you safe in the lake of fire. Oh, your flesh will waste in the flames that roar, and my imps torment you evermore. Then the cowboy awoke with an anguished cry his clothes wet with sweat and his hair standing high. Then he prayed as he never prayed until that hour to be saved from his sin and the demon's power. And his prayers and his vows were not in vain, for he never rode the hell-bound train. All right, it's Monday. You asked for it. This ain't the Crystal Ballroom. And this ain't Mel Allen talking here. My name ain't Bill Cullen. This ain't old friendly Henry Morgan. I ain't gonna sit here and talk about Adler elevator shoes. Ah. You know, speaking of the nuttiness that's coming to the fore in connection with this very thing, do you know anything about Reuters? This is about the most official news agency in the world. Oh, yes. No. I'm not discussing whether or not they're successful. They're very, very... Oh, no. You know why I think of Reuters? Now, you're missing the point of why I say official. Out of Reuters comes always the sinister little notes that precede the downfall of one civilization or another because it's a European news service. Oh, yes. For example, all the World War II bulletins about Hitler were carried on... Do you remember the famous German news agency, DNB? DNB and Reuters. And as a kid, when I was just a little thing, you know, I almost said something other. I was just this little thing, you see. We're reading the Chicago Tribune, you know, and the Chicago Tribune was always Dateline Chicago. oh yes, they invented their own foreign news service and right there in Chicago, you know, generally. So it was a very different thing. But once in a while you'd go on and said, Reuters, Arnhem, the Netherlands, July 2nd, Reuters. I'm going to give you a true Reuters news note, which in a way tells more about the decline of our time. And in fact, it's worldwide, you know. Don't think it's just American. You know, everybody thinks that if he gets to Europe, that all the foolishness will cease. You'd be surprised at the number of letters that I get from hippies who say, boy, if I could only get to Paris, man, I know I'd make it. I just know it. You know, and there's that little note of trailing off almost the self-assurance of a guy who is at a party and he wants to continue to tell himself that he's having a great time and actually he's having a drag, you know? He's, boy, am I having a great time. Oh, boy. Boy. You know, that kind of thing. He's, oh, if I could only get to Europe. Well, I want to read to you now a news note from Reuters. Speaking of the hellbound train. Arnhem, the Netherlands, July 2nd, Reuters. Instead of gargoyles... The restored tower of the Eusebius Protestant Church is now adorned with sculptures of comic strip characters, including Donald Duck and the Three Little Pigs. The church was damaged during World War II. I repeat, instead of gargoyles, the church in Arnhem, the Netherlands, is now decorated with Donald Duck and the Three Little Pigs. The church was damaged during World War II. Obviously, far more than gargoyles were damaged. Hello, test. You still out there? Just thought you ought to know. And some nice little lady's going to say, gee, Mr. Shepherd, I certainly enjoy your program, but I cannot agree with your taste in music. That very difficult music you play, it's not that I'm criticizing you, I want you to know, but I'm always getting ready for bed at this hour, and I find that I have to go and run to my radio continually because you never warn me when you're going to raise your voice or bring on some terrible, terrible, cacophonous music. I don't know... What to do, signed? A John Gambling listener. I like string music. Wake him up for a change out there. Speaking. You're going to ask me why it is that I don't You know, it's constantly. Somebody always write in with it within every, I'd say within, oh, I'd say three times a week I get letters saying, Mr. Shepherd, you're out of your mind. You're sick, 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 rotten sick. You don't think I'm going to sign my name to you? Rotten sick. You know what you are. You're rotten sick. You're sick. Yes, I know that story, too. I've been to that wall before. You know, speaking of being to the wall, you can't help it, can you, Dad? Speaking of being to the wall, you know, I must tell you, before we do that, I'll have to do this commercial. We have with us the Mandarin House tonight. And all the food is good there. And if you really want to get on the hellbound train in style, I suggest you go down there and get yourself all lychee nutted up. I mean, get some of those lychee nuts down there and sit there with that smug smile on your face and just sit there and quietly let it gurgle right down through all of it. As a matter of fact, one of the finest Eastern restaurants in the entire Western Hemisphere can be found right down on 13th Street. And incidentally, speaking of visions from hell, on the corner of 13th Street and 6th Avenue, I suggest you go. And when you go there, no, I don't care whether you go to the Mandarin House or not. That's your loss if you don't go, Dad. I mean, you can go get needy to call up if you want. But seriously, go to the corner of 13th Street some night. 13th Street and 6th Avenue, and you'll see a strange-looking building there. It's a structure, literally. It's not a building, it's a structure. It's an occasion. It's a happening. And standing on the corner of 13th Street and 6th Avenue is this thing. It's made out of all kinds of wood, all nailed together. And it sticks up in the sky there. Now, what is it? Well, I'll tell you. It's all lit from underneath. You know how they, out on the West Coast and in other nutty sections of the country, they light trees up with lights? And, you know, they light up the front of their house with little red and yellow and green lights all the time. And they have their little sign out in front of their house that says, The Bagleys. You know, the little light on there. You know, this kind of nuttiness, you see. And then they get, and if they live in Connecticut, they get their license plate. It says B-A-G-S. You know, that kind of thing. And you know that the friendly old Bagleys have just passed by in their continual battle. You know, old Bagley's drinking like a fish and she's swinging with the next door neighbor. And the kids are all turning out to be neurotic, you know, and his hands in the till down at the Carbide Coal and Chemical Company. You know, the whole bit that they got the thing that says the Bagleys. Well, that's beside the point. Ours is not today to question why. Incidentally, he's the first guy to write me a letter and say I'm sick. Signed a Republican. Well, brings up another subject, but since we're not on that subject, this thing on the corner of 13th and 6th Avenue, on the top of it, it has a little aluminum house that somehow looks like Valhalla up there. Looks very improbable. I don't know. It's sitting up on the top there. It's very improbable. There has no windows and just sits up there. And it looks like it's about six stories high, and this little house is up on the top of this thing. Now, I don't know whether it's a sinister plot or what, but they have left a couple of little holes on the side of this contrivance where you can stand up if you get on your tiptoes and look down into this wooden structure. You will see a vision of hell like you never thought you would see before. Go look. Just go look. I'm not going to tell you. It's up to you. Every man has his own hell. I'm not going to sit here and tell you about mine. You got your own one. I mean, you're probably married to her. She's probably married to you, Dad. I mean, so what difference does it make, you know? You know, has it ever occurred to you that about 75% of the stuff we say, we pretend we believe in? What if you really started to say the stuff you really believed? What would happen tomorrow morning if you're walking in, you know, and you get into the elevator and the big shot says, geez, how are you, Charlie? You have a great weekend? And you really told him what kind of a weekend you had, you see. And then he says to you, good to see you, Charlie. And then you tell him what you really feel like in seeing him. Seriously. Can you imagine what really would happen? Can you imagine what would happen if you know, most guys after a certain length of time are carrying through a kind of charade, you know, after about 15 years of any one given thing, they've forgotten completely why they got into it. Like guys have forgotten why they married the chick they married. Yes, they have. After 15 years, that's true. And they now other things have come in, like house payments and all that jazz in the car, and they begin to believe that this is why they married the chick. And on the other hand, you see, she's got the same problem. She forgets why she married this fat slob, you know, who sits there and burps. And you know, with a beer can and sits around and watches wrestling and all that stuff. And she's bugged right up to the ears, you see. And she's forgotten it too. But after 15 years, you kind of carry on, you know, it's some kind of a thing. It's like a long playing record that has no end. Just goes on and on and on. You see, after 14 movements of the symphony, there's no reason why there shouldn't be a 47th or 112th or 590th or 10 millionth for that matter. Just goes on and on and on. Well, this is another thing. So after a while, people began to adapt a certain amount of ground rules. You see, where there are certain areas that they never ever touch. Ever touch. Like, for example, why is Fred such a slob? You never discuss this. You see, and on the other hand, Fred never discusses why you do not excite him at all. In any sense of the word. He never brings this up, you see. It's never discussed. And she never discusses the millions of little things between people that we never discuss. Now, we just never really discuss it. Now, like, we're blowing up A-bombs out there 8,000 miles on the surface. Now, if the Russians were blowing up A-bombs 8,000 miles in the air, we would really be teed off. For whatever reason, we would really be teed off. But you can't get anybody to be, you don't hear anybody really teed off about it. A few guys with signs, but the commentators, and you know, they're sort of, it's like another great big fun thing has happened out there. And they'll say 87 miles in the future, you know, or feet up in the air, 2,000 miles up or something. It doesn't make any difference. So there are things you don't discuss on the air. Or any place else for that matter. You really don't honestly discuss them. Now nobody ever really says whether he really believes in a religion or not. Or there are millions of things like that. Do you, here, you know, there's a fascinating thing happening out on the, you know, I don't know whether it happened or not. You know, we take tests now. Let's give you an example of that. When we take tests, you know as well as I do that there are certain numbers of things which you accept that you think that everybody else believes, but because you're rotten, you don't, you know? it's like going to a funeral, you know? You're all standing around, and everybody's weeping and wailing and hollering, and you can't really find it. You feel like you don't feel sad enough. You know what I mean by that? You feel that you're not crying enough, or you're not feeling this enough. Well, the secret is that nobody in the room feels it. This is a kind of thing we've got going. That the minute somebody dies, it's every man for himself and we scramble on. That's all. It has to be this way. Because if it wasn't, do you realize how many people have died since the dawn of history? Do you realize what a fantastic hang-up we'd have if we really felt the way we pretend we feel about the dead? Nah. Stop it. Now, I'm sure that I'm going to get a letter from some, hey, Mr. Shepherd, my husband, Charles, and no, his name was Fred. My husband, Fred, and I were as close as two peas in the pot. And hardly a day goes by, but I don't think of Howard when I go to bed. I think certainly of how Max always sat down and he'd play his banjo. No, it was the guitar he played to me, actually. And I want you to know, Mr. Shepherd, that actually, I think you're rotten and sick, and I don't think you should be allowed on the radio. You're a rotten, sick person, and I'm going to report you to John Gambling and Dorothy Kilgall. In fact, I'm writing copies of this letter to Peggy and Fitzgerald.
Getting back, next to this monstrosity they're building on 13th and 6th, you will find huddled in the shadow there the best restaurant in town, or one of them anyway, and that's the Mandarin House between 6th and 7th, okay? All right, now I'm going to ask you some questions. I want you to really level with me. Now listen carefully. I want you to really level with me. And I think what we ought to do, Ed, I did, Ted, hey, Teddy, I did that in two sections. So don't give them credit for, they did not have anything to do with the Bagleys, Ted. The Bagleys have gone their own particular road to hell without any help from the Mandarin House. Okay? You know, now before you go away, hey Al, before you go away, I've got something here. You can't leave. This is important here. This one thing now, this is the point of it. You're leaving at the punchline. Now, I want you to really level with me here. And now, you don't have to say it out loud. Just say it to yourself. Because nobody really would have the guts to say it out loud. Now here, I have before me a questionnaire which has been given to thousands of college students and high school students of the upper grades, and it's to test their attitudes, and it's called the Practical Policy Test. And it's copyrighted by Martin G. Fritz and Charles O. Knight of Iowa State College. A very official thing. Now, here's the way it works. I ask a question of you, and there are four different degrees of answer. A means definitely acceptable. I agree wholeheartedly with the statement. A, fairly acceptable. In general, I agree with the statement, but not too strongly. D, mild disagreement. I am inclined not to agree with the statement. In general, I think I would reject it. D, definitely rejected. I absolutely do not agree with the statement. Now, those are the four different attitudes. Now, I'm going to ask you now. I'm going to start reading some of these questions, and I want you to honestly to yourself answer what you really think and not what you know you're supposed to think. There are two different things, you know, and two specifically different things. We like to believe we're the same. Now, listen carefully. I read one. It is difficult for me to imagine an honest politician. He may mean very well when he starts out, but it is probable that he will not stay that way. Now, what do you think about that? Do you agree? Do you heartily reject it? Remember, he says, it is difficult for me to imagine an honest politician. Now, level. I ask you another one. Here's a good one for you. Money may be the root of all evil, but give me more root, and I'll take a chance on the evil. Now, you know what you're supposed to say there. Come on now, level here. Anyone who believes in humanity just lacks a little by way of understanding how the world is run. Oh boy, there's a loaded one. Anyone who believes in humanity, and humanity is in quotes, just lacks a little by way of understanding how the world is run. Now, what do you really feel about that? Now, honest, you don't have to say anything out loud, you see, because you know that you're supposed to believe in humanity. Now, stop it. You know this. I'm going to ask you another one. Clergymen, with very few exceptions, get through life pretty easily. That is to say, they have what we would ordinarily call a soft job. What is your actual belief in this? Now, you know what you're supposed to say there, I'm sure. Can you imagine what would happen if you went through and you really put down what you really thought about all this stuff? Boy, they would trot you out. They would take you away. They would tie you up. They would send you out. They would do... Can you imagine what that... Listen to this. It is my opinion that there is very little chance of permanently eliminating war from this world. You know what you're supposed to say there. Listen to this one. Blow your own horn, because nobody else will blow it for you. And you know what you're supposed to say. Ah, it's a rotten thing to say. I reject that absolutely. I don't believe that. Here's one. Here's a little gasser for you to actually answer. Although elections in America are democratic, the people do not have as much voice in the government as they think they do. We quickly go on to the next one. It is silly to get too much excited about the condition of hillbillies and uneducated people. They probably are happier than we are. I mean, what would you do if you had to answer these things, Dad? I mean, really, seriously. Listen to this one. I would rather be smart and crooked than dull and honest. Now, really, honestly, answer that. Don't say, oh, no, I'd rather be honest, Mr. Shepherd, at all costs. Think carefully now. I would rather be smart and crooked than dull and honest. Here's a little juicer right here. For the most part, our laws are made to protect the rich. Well, as a matter of fact, how many times have you seen one of those Cadillacs ticketed when one of those guys sitting up in the front with the black suits with the little hats? Just thought I'd ask a question there, just to put it in its proper perspective. Now, the questions here are fascinating, you know, because it's very difficult. Listen to this. Human nature is such that if you give a man an inch, he will take a mile.
Now, you know what you're supposed to say there. You see, each one of these, you can spot immediately what you're supposed to say. Right? Right? All right, all right. Okay, here's one. About 90% of our education at the present time is a waste of time. Here's a good one. I think most wealthy people have come by their wealth dishonestly. If not by their own means, at least by their father's or their grandfather's methods. Just a little gasser there. Here's kind of a nice one to really listen to answer. Now, seriously, if you have money, you can do just about anything you like. Now, answer that one really correct. Answer with that, honestly, the way you really feel about that. These are pretty hard to answer, you know. Here's a kind of a nice one. This is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! Well, what do you really believe? Come on. Here's kind of a nice one. See, I think there's a good chance that the human race will simply destroy itself one day. You know what you're supposed to say there. You know? This is kind of nice. The average American has very few ideas and is interested mostly in money. Laborers, for the most part, are just too dumb to know any better. If they don't get along, it's due to their own stupidity, and it's just as well that way anyway, since somebody has to do the scut. Now, you know what you're supposed to say there. You know? In this game called life, it is best to do the other fellow before he does you. You can depend on it that business will charge all the public will stand. This one's dedicated to the steel industry. You can depend upon it that business will pretend then that what it is charging, since it is charging all that the public can stand, it is doing so for the public's good. Answer that one. Just thought you ought to know that there are some difficult questions facing us. Just thought you ought to know.
Gene Shepherd, July 9th, 1962, and we're smack out of time for the dustbin of history. This is your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week. So long, gang.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal. Well, I'm going to come back.